From WXXI News, this is Weekend Connections, the podcast. Always nice to have you along. Thanks for joining us. I'm Evan Dawson.
And I'm Megan Mack. We'll open the week in review with a question about speech. Can speech be violent? Libertarians have been arguing that there's too much hand-wringing over offensive speech. They say that we're too easily offended, and even worse, we're too willing to say that speech can be dangerous.
In this clip, we'll start with a confrontation last month at the University of New Hampshire between comedian and libertarian Dave Rubin and some students. Rubin is arguing for a near absolute freedom of speech, and then in this clip you'll hear Monroe County Libertarian Party Chair Kevin Wilson, followed by local activist Stephanie Vargas.
You don't have a right to be not offended. I wish, we all wish that we lived in a better place where magically everybody was wonderful, where magically everyone was sweet and decent. We don't live in that world, but if you think that the government forcing people to act as you wish they would act is going to bring peace and love and harmony, it actually will only bring the complete reverse. Every time in the history of the world that the government promised utopia, it brought dystopia. Every time that the government expanded to create some magical society, it brings societies that kill millions of people. So what you should want is exactly what you have in America right now, which is that you have equality. You can have a job. You can live free. I hope you have someone in your life that you love. You can have all of those things. And if the government started cracking down on you because you happen to be trans, I will be your biggest ally. I will be out there with you every day. So you really need to be careful what you ask for. I get it. You're coming from a place where you don't want to be hurt. Nobody wants to be hurt, right? Everybody has had bad said about them. Everyone's got something they're insecure about. Everyone's got it. But believe me, the idea that the government is going to solve that problem, it is not the way to go.
All right, that's Dave Rubin. Libertarian Party chair is here. So Rubin's a libertarian. From that perspective, anything you heard that you disagree with?
No, I agree with Dave Rubin's perspective. And the idea that the government can come in and limit speech is extremely dangerous, that the consequences for doing so would be far greater and far more damaging for any causes, including racial justice or trans rights, than limiting speech. That if we were to use government intervention to do that, and we were to have someone in power who, say, wouldn't be so friendly to some of those causes that you agree with, like, say, our current president, It could be dangerous.
Okay. He also said, "You have equality right now." Do you agree with that?
There are problems. I mean, I'm not going to disagree with that, and I think that those problems need to be solved with speech and advocacy. That's what it needs to be solved with. But in terms of speech, yeah, you have equality. You have a platform. You have a public space. You have different forms in which you can advocate for your rights and defend your civil liberties.
All right, Stephanie Vargas. Let's start with the clip itself. Anything you heard from Dave Rubin that you disagree with?
Yeah, that equality statement did stick out to me. Like, yes, we should have equality. And if you look at the Constitution, we can have it. But do we? Absolutely not. We do not have equality. It also struck me as a bit condescending when he says, oh, just because you feel hurt or you're insecure about something. That's not what it has anything to do with. Like, yes, we all have freedom of speech. You can say whatever you want. We have the freedom to do so. But that doesn't mean it's free from consequence. And they can be hateful. And it can leave long-term effects. And it can lead to violence. I mean, I can change gears for a second because he disagrees that, or he thinks that speech cannot be violent. Well, if you look at different forms of violence, for instance, domestic violence, it's not just physical abuse. It's financial, it's emotional, and verbal abuse that ties into violence itself. So what you say, there's a difference between having a debate, which you should do and do often. That's what we're doing right now. We're having a debate with someone that we disagree with. There's nothing hateful about it. It's creating discourse. It's healthy. It's progressive. It's what we need to do. It's when speech starts to turn hateful, when you start dehumanizing a group of people that you disagree with. Trans women and men, people of color, Muslims, Hispanics. When you start to dehumanize somebody else by using your speech, that is a form of violence. And therefore, speech can be violent.
Okay. And then if it's a form of violence, and we generally have an agreement in the society that violence is not allowed, mm-hmm. how should the state draw limits on it?
See, that's where it gets very tricky, because it is a gray area, mm-hmm. and it can turn very easily when you create laws that start to limit speech, even if it's to help minorities, for instance. It usually ends up disproportionately targeting minorities. So I don't think that limiting speech using government use, I think it would backfire for the people who advocate for it the most.
Next, it's another question. Lots of questions for the audience this week, but hey, we challenge our listeners to think a little bit. And this question is focused on whether urbanists have become too mean, too rude, too condescending. Urbanists are generally people who want more modes of transportation, more walkable cities, more close-knit communities, less reliance on cars.
This clip begins with local planner Marlena Zink, followed by Jason Partika of Reconnect Rochester, and it closes with Phil Karras, an urban planner from Vancouver, who says that his colleagues have largely become too smug.
I think the whole culture of shaming in general is unproductive at best, and the way I see it is that in education and planning, or even an understanding, but being really deep in urbanism and that culture is... it's a privilege to have that kind of education. And I think even though this kind of phrasing has become a little cliche, but with that kind of privilege comes a responsibility. And I think when it turns into shaming, it becomes elitist and counterproductive, because you're not using your education to teach others and help others. You're using it to berate people.
Okay. And Jason Partika, I'm going to kick to you by reading what you wrote in the Twitter thread that started this whole thing. You're going to have to come on and defend this. Are you ready for this? Here we go.
Absolutely.
Jason wrote, quote, "When we ban cigarette smoking in public because of its impact on the environment and public health, are we shaming smokers? Maybe. Pollution created by cars pumps toxic gases into the air and warms the environment, the same 1-2 punch as smoking. Are we shaming drivers? Maybe. I understand why people move to the suburbs. They're trying to do what's best for their children. They want a big yard for the kids to play in and good schools for the kids to go to. Nobody moves to the suburbs to destroy the world, but the consequences are the same regardless," end quote. All right, were you being hyperbolic for effect, or you think suburbanites are destroying the world?
Well, I don't think the intention is for them to destroy the world, but, you know, there's, you know, urbanism itself has gotten caught up in two larger things, the climate change crisis, and then just the structural institutions of, like, racism and poverty in our society. Urbanism is being seen as a solution to both of those things, even though urbanism was created independent of those. So I think people cling on to that, you know. How we transport ourselves is either in the top three contributors to climate change, and we need to radically change how we transport ourselves in order to undo the effects of climate change. And, you know, it's always frustrating, you know, change is slow. And I think people can get frustrated when they think there's a solution in hand and it's just not being implemented.
Do you think shaming works?
I don't think so. I think it's something that's been going on for 20 years. It's not like climate change is new. People have been told to drive less for 20 years. We're not driving less. So it obviously doesn't work. If it did, we wouldn't see that trend.
Okay. And so this is a time where I'm going to turn back to Phil Karras and offer some insight that we got on the program recently from Tom Nichols, who is a professor at the Naval War College and wrote a book called The Death of Expertise. And I asked him about the difference between sort of slow, considerate, rational conversation versus shaming. And Nichols said he's basically to the point where he thinks shaming is actually more effective. He said he's tired of ignorance and bad decision-making and bad arguments, and he's tired of just saying, oh, you think the moon landing was faked. Well, let's unpack your belief there. He's saying, no, I'm going to mock you for that because that's idiotic. And, so Phil Karras, from the Tom Nichols standpoint, that mocking and shaming actually works better than careful engagement. Is this a place where you would disagree with that?
Wow, I have to say my worldview is actually a little shattered hearing Tom say that, because so much of my motivation in bringing up this topic was based on that idea of experts versus lay people,
okay.
And the death of expertise. To go back to what Jason said, I would say his tweet response is something I agree with 100%. And it's a matter of telling people, I don't think we should sugarcoat the fact that suburban car-dependent development is killing the environment. I don't think we should sugarcoat it, but it's a matter of telling people, you know, providing people, saying there are options, there are things we can do, approaching it rationally. And, you know, again, like Jason said, people don't move to the suburbs because they're trying to kill the environment. A lot of people, I do believe, are still somewhat ignorant about the effects of their lifestyle choices on the overall environment. You might think of things like, oh, you know, I recycle plastic bags, or, you know, I use an organics bin, think you're helping the environment without even realizing that you drive to work an hour every day and you're pumping emissions into the atmosphere. I don't know what to say about whether or not shaming is effective. I think being blunt is more effective than beating around the bush, but there's a fine line between being blunt and shaming.
We'll close with another question. This one's about comedy. Where is the line, and when should we cross it? Our panel of local comedians debated it.
In this clip, it starts with a caller named Patrick framing the issue in a different way. He wants to know why we've become less willing to cross the line and laugh at ourselves. Then you'll hear us discuss his call with John Forrest Thompson, who teaches improv at the Focus Theater in Rochester.
All the comedians, whether it's Roseanne Barr, Michelle Wolf, or Samantha Bee, I think the fundamental mistake they're making is this same thing we try to teach our kids. You know, are you laughing with you or laughing at you? And I think these comedians are inviting their audience to laugh at the other side, and they're not inviting them to laugh the other side to share laughing with each other. George Carlin made us laugh at ourselves or laugh with ourselves. And Jeff Foxworthy, who you just mentioned, you know, the people who laugh the hardest at his jokes are the rednecks that he describes. So I just think that it's the tribalism that's really at issue here, is that we're not really inviting each other to laugh about our own foibles. If you go back to All in the Family and compare that to the Roseanne Barr show that just went off the air, I mean, nobody knew Carol O'Connor's politics. I mean, but we all have to know Samantha Bee's and our Roseanne's politics. And I think it's unfortunate that a comedian's politics are now a part of their identity and now a part of their humor.
I'm not the professional in the room. I've got three really well-studied and respected people on the local comedy scene. Just as an observer, I think there's something really powerful in what Patrick just said there, because when Carlin tells the audience, you want to complain about the government, you are the government, you're the idiots who elected these people, he's calling his audience idiots, he's making them laugh, and then having them hopefully realize about themselves, okay. And again, I'm picking one joke. I'm not looking at his entire body of work. But it does feel that most of the material, pick any comedian, no matter what their political ideology is, most of the laughs they're aiming for are getting their audience, who probably agree with them, to laugh at the people who are the ostensible idiots who have a different view of the world. And I think Patrick's point there, it resonated with me. John, does it resonate with you? Is there a point there? Is he overstating it?
Not at all. As I mentioned before, the audience is different in the feedback in terms of social media, is different. I mean, you've got bots and trolls that inflate it on both sides, not to mention just, how emboldened we are to say something on Twitter that we wouldn't say to someone's face, right? Like a neighbor down the street or something like that. Yeah, I think Patrick made a great point. I think the silos that we're living in right now is probably heightening this a little bit. But it can't be much different than it was in the 60s, when socially things were kind of on fire like that. And, art tends to get better in periods like this, and then it'll flatten out. Moderate art in the middle that everyone kind of likes tends to get boring, and then it'll flare out to the edges a little bit.
I think there's a real risk to not being able to laugh at ourselves. And we are at a time where all of the data shows that we are spending less time with people who disagree with us. We live farther away from people who disagree with us. We don't really watch the shows from people with different political ideology. We don't watch the comedy from people with different political ideology. And if we're not making fun of ourselves, we get so self-righteous, we think, well, our view is the perfect truth, and no one could be criticizing it. I mean, Anthony Bourdain And we're going to talk about it more this summer when we bring back the Summer of Food on Connections. Anthony Bourdain used to say that, man, the people who can't laugh at themselves the most are the vegans and the craft beer lovers.
And, you know, that's so true.
And now the vegans and the craft beer lovers are going to call me and yell at me for that, which I have so much love for you vegans and craft beer lovers. So much love. I love vegan cooking and I love craft beer. But the notion is that we can't laugh at ourselves. And so I think there's danger there. And I'm a big fan of comedians who get us to laugh at ourselves a little bit and take ourselves a little less seriously.
And I think what was interesting about Roseanne this time around with the reboot, I really enjoyed the show. I thought it was pretty good. And I wondered how the flyover states would handle, you know, having a granddaughter of a different color and, you know, a grandson that was dealing with his gender issues and that kind of thing. I mean, Roseanne, that was part of that show, too. And I think that's why people maybe on the left tuned in,
right?
Because they like that kind of thing. And then, but I mean, some of the subject matter that they dealt with this time around, that she was joking about illegally getting all those prescription drugs, you know, and that was interesting, and kind of people were worried about far different things. And I thought, wow, well, that was a pretty powerful issue that she just tackled, and nobody's really talking about that.
A lot of food for thought this week. That's another edition of Weekend Connections, the podcast. You can hear Connections every weekday afternoon from noon to 2 on WXXI AM 1370, WRUR 88.5 FM, and WEOS, Finger Lakes Public Radio, 89.5 FM.
We are also on the WXXI mobile app. He's Evan. I'm Megan. Have a great weekend, everyone. We will talk to you Monday.